Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
How you doing, Stone? You had a big Friday night, didn't you?
I did have a big Friday night. This is going to be a fun segment today where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. But yeah, I got to give you the venture capital report, man. First of all, I learned early on Friday that the $25 loan I made on Kiva, the guy's already started to pay back, and
there
I've gotten
go.
$2.74 back.
Nice.
And so I may throw another $25 at that thing. So that was good to know. And then later in the evening, I had the distinct pleasure of attending the Shark Tank, a private viewing of Shark Tank with Damon John. And that was an absolute blast. We had a wonderful time. I do think I'm getting a little bit old, though. I took my college-age daughter / summer Business Radio X intern with me, and she's elbowing me. She's very mature. She handled it really well, but she's telling me about all these celebrities in the room. I didn't recognize any of them. The only guy in the whole room that I recognized as a celebrity was Damon John. So I was feeling a little bit old, and so we had this private viewing, and at first I was a little bit disappointed because what we were actually watching was the same thing you could have watched Friday night at 8 o'clock. It was a rerun of the Shark Tank episode. But what was incredibly informative, very inspiring, and I just thoroughly enjoyed, is when the commercial would come on, they'd go sound down on that, Damon would come out, and he would describe what was really happening behind the scenes. And he was talking, we got to ask him questions about, you know, what's going through your mind, what are you looking for when you make an investment? And you learn very quickly, this guy is sharp as a tack. Of course, you know, a lot of folks that have a net worth of that.
they tend to be pretty sharp.
They tend to not be the dullest knife in the drawer anyway. But to get some insight on what actually happens behind the scenes, one of the questions that I thought I'd share with our listeners, they were asking about what do you look for? What criteria do you use when you're thinking about making the offer? And he said, we all attack it different. He said to one guy, the richest in the crowd is that Mark Cuban guy. He said he's got so much money, he just throws money at everybody and some stuff sticks and he makes it back. One of them, I can't remember which one, makes his investments largely predicated on what he thinks his kids will think is cool. And then the woman, the real estate mogul, I think, she's really a sucker for the underdog hard luck story because that's where she comes from. So it was an absolute blast. And I just want to give a shout out to Shark Branding and Philip Boykin, who invited us to attend. Sorry you couldn't go, man.
Yeah, I know. I missed it. But how was it different than, I mean, we deal with a lot of angel investor people come in here. How different was his mentality as some of, you know, like Devin and the angel group he runs?
Well, I don't know that it was any different. There's a certain degree of magnetism, and I guess it comes with that level of celebrity. And it may be that Devin and that crowd have the same mentality. There were a couple of things that really stuck in my mind. One was he made a point and described it a couple of different ways, but the essential point was it's not what you negotiate, it's what you sign. As it turns out, a lot of those deals that you see don't actually happen.
Right.
Because there's all kinds of little things that happening in the background. And in one of the questions, they asked him, okay, what if you were pitching FUBU? He's the guy that did the FUBU or the Urban clothing brand. What if you were pitching FUBU today? And his first comment, he was very humble. He's a very charming, engaging guy anyway. And he said, well, first of all, I'd have never made it past casting. I was so green, you know, back when I was doing it. He said, but if I were doing it today, you know, I would talk in terms of the benefit to them, not all about how great and wonderful I am. I'd talk about, look, if you're making coats in the winter, I'll make shirts in the summer. And while I'm gone, that'll free you up to go on vacation and enjoy yourself and enjoy your family. And when you get back, there'll be a check waiting on you. But it was just the mentality of how to pitch in a way that is meaningful to the other person. So I thought we learned a lot.
That's a good segue to our first guest.
It's a marvelous segue to our next guest. So this morning on the High Velocity Radio Show, a little bit later in the program, we are going to hear from Robert Anderson with Bright Whistle, some very interesting and attractive technology there. We're going to hear from Jeff Spence with Innovolt. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Grand Poobah of TAG, Technology Association of Georgia. Welcome back to the studio, Tino Mantella.
It's always my pleasure to be here. You guys are good. I enjoy the time with you, so it's
great to be here. It beats the heck out of working, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
I think the last time we ran into you was at the summit where we saw the 40 innovative companies and we got to interview a bunch of them. Do you want to share a little bit about what's going on in the state of technology here in Georgia?
Well, you guys are working hard. So we had the summit, and every time I came over there, you had another guest, which was great to see. And,
yes.
You know, you added to the dynamism, I would say, of the event, because it's good to have some of the press and media there, and folks like yourself that really care about the community and make an impact. So the summit was our ninth annual summit, and we had a record crowd of about 1,000 people there. We do a number of things. We pack a lot into that half day, as you guys know. So we had the top 40 innovative technology companies. Along with that, we recognized not one but three new Hall of Fame inductees, which is great. And then we had a number of great speakers that participated with us, and I got to give a little bit of a state of the industry report, which I guess is one of the reasons why you guys had me here today. So it's the state of the industry in Georgia's technology is going quite well. We did a number of things at that event, including announced kind of with a drum roll the economic impact that the state has in respect to technology. And the big number was $113.1 billion in terms of kind of gross sales in the for the industry in 2011, and that represents 17% of the state's GDP. And so, you know, we wanted people to know that in the audience, but it really is intended to talk to the community at large, and certainly from a government-facing standpoint, that technology's an extremely important industry for Georgia.
Is 17% higher than normal? Is that where you want it to be? What do you show? You want it to be 100? We'll kind of push out all the other industries and just be a technology city?
17% is big. We were surprised it was that high. If you kind of total the 253,000 technologists in the state, and then you look at the buying power of those right. technologists, how many jobs they create, we actually came up with the number 612,000 people. And so it's big. And we had Alfie Meeks from Georgia Tech, who's a researcher, do the stuff, not us. So it's actually valid. And, you know, you can look at those numbers in different ways. But we wanted really people to know 17% of the total. I think that's significant. I don't know if it needs to be higher. I mean, I think it will be higher over time because of the way technology is taking over the world. But it's a major piece, and you guys heard me say before that a lot of times Georgia is known for peaches, pecans, pine trees, poultry, and peanuts. So technology is really a significant part of it, and we want Georgia and then people outside Georgia to know. I think you had a chance to look at the video that we created around this as well, and that's intended to let people know outside of Georgia that technology is important here.
Now, I've heard you suggest on more than one occasion that there are two or three areas that the state really needs to focus on to continue this,
yes.
To continue on this track. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, actually, we've identified seven, so we might have gone up since last time we talked to you. But there's seven clusters, and there's Michael Porter. A number of people have done studies on clusters over the year, and with clusters come more industry. So what we've said is rather than chase the buffalo hunts or go after the rainbows, that it's important to look at the industries where we actually have a leadership position. And we've identified seven where we say that we're in the top five, and top five is measured by number of employees, amount of revenue that's produced in those industries. And they are, let's see if I can get them
all
down.
See how good you are.
Yeah, see how good I am. I might have a Rick Perry moment here. But they are fintech, so financial technologies, and you think about that with NCR, First Data, Global Payments, TSYS, Fiserv has a major presence here. And then you have health IT, where we lay claim to being number one in the nation or the nation's capital for health IT with over 200.
You got a real nice nod there from
yeah,
Bright Whistle
I
guy
know.
In the studio.
220 health IT companies here, really important. And then communication services, and they straddle from CBON to even the presence at AT&T and Verizon and a number of other companies have in that area. Information security and logistics technologies are also important here. And then a couple new ones that we've added are interactive marketing and finally mission-critical facilities, which really relates to data centers. And we have over 100 major data centers here in Georgia. So I think I hit all seven. And if you look at those industries, we have a core of businesses here that tend to build more businesses. So I like to reference it, even if you look at the Kia plant, you know, which isn't really, I mean, they use a lot of technology there. But when Kia came in to West Point, Georgia, then a lot of companies in that area were moved to that area to support the industry. And the same thing happens in fintech and health IT, where both more health IT companies come here, people start thinking about talent. They look for talent here because they say fintech, you know, if you're going to do a fintech company, consider Georgia. Atlanta is a place for that. So we tried to make that clear to everyone, including the government. So as they do have limited dollars to invest, that they should look at some of those companies in some of those areas to invest in.
Now, you mentioned 7 clusters, and it seems like those clusters have increased. Is there anything that's happening to create more clusters, or is it better to kind of build out the existing clusters in your mind?
Well, it's better to build out the existing clusters. I mean, there's always emerging clusters that we may have certainly a presence in. We talk a lot here about in Georgia about bioscience, particularly when Governor Perdue was in office and biotech, and they reference CDC and a number of other kind of health-related or bio-related areas that could make us a strong presence here. But it's you know, the life cycle for those companies, the amount you have to invest to build those industries, build those businesses, is challenging. And there's a number of states that, like North Carolina, for one, that actually has a lot more bioscience. So I'm not saying we shouldn't go after that area, but that if you look at those clusters that we have and say, okay, what do we need to do to support those, including helping to find capital, which you guys talk a lot about, and supporting the young companies coming up. We think that's a better
use of the limited resources.
Yes. Yeah.
I know we're sure having a good time. We're getting more and more immersed in the venture capital, angel investor, and startup world. And it's just, to me, it's just so invigorating just to hang out with people that have that degree of passion. And, you talk about the IQ points.
Yeah.
You sit down with a few of those kids.
Right. Yeah.
You have to have a good self-concept.
Right, right.
You could lose some ego in a hurry. If you would, could you give us a quick primer on mission and purpose of TAG in general, and maybe just a little bit of an insight, a little window into what you and your team are trying to do day in, day out, kind of a day in the life of the TAG folks.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing?
Well, our mission statement is that we educate, promote, influence, and unite the technology community. So those words, educate, promote, influence, and unite, are really the things that we work to do. I have a volunteer role that I'm playing now that's part of chairing Technology Councils in North America. So I get to work with another 40 organizations that are like TAG around the U.S. and Canada. We actually have a couple international groups now. And TAG is actually largest in the U.S. right now with over 15,000 technology members and almost 2,000 companies that are technology companies that are members of TAG. So there's two things we primarily try to do under those four areas. One is to connect the community, and that's what we're more known for. If you ask people why they get involved with TAG, one is they want to productively network. They want to come to a place and meet with other people, knowledge exchange, thought leadership. And we actually have 31, we just added a mobility society, different special interest groups.
That's what you needed was another special interest group.
I know.
We
had
goodness.
To add one. Well, mobility's hot, so we jumped on that. We have a lot of companies like UPS and Home Depot and others that are getting involved with that society that want to talk about how to bring mobility to their companies or you know, one of the hotter terms now is bring your own device. You know, how they're working on everybody being able to bring their own device that they enjoy to work and how they provide security for that. So we own the connecting space, we feel like, because those 31 societies generate about 220 meetings a year. So pretty much any weekday during the life of TAG, there's some meeting going on or activity going on that brings the community together, and people like that. And that's a unique differentiator between us and the other technology councils out there. And then the second thing is, as we've matured as an organization, and I've encouraged the board to look at this, and they've been very supportive, is we want to be an economic development engine. So we're doing a lot more in terms of legislation around the state in areas. I think you probably have talked about on this show that we recently passed allowing alternative investment use of state pension funds, which we were the only state left to do that. So
right.
I don't know if it was a big feather in our cap, but it was kind of getting it out of the way and into the wind column. But that took, according to Sig Mosley, about 20 years to make happen. So, and if Sig Mosley said it, it's I'm sure it's true. So 20 years working on that. And we're currently working on creating a strategic plan for technology. So a little more in the economic development side. The other thing that we did is we hired, and I might have mentioned this last time I was on the show, but a technology evangelist who is responsible for helping to promote the technology industry, because we didn't see anyone else in Georgia really picking that up. In fact, with state budgets cut, groups that used to do that have cut back on that. So we thought it was a good role for TAG. We hired this PR director position, and she's doing a great job for us. And last year we helped generate over 200 million media impressions in respect to the technology industry. If you go to the airport, you'll see billboards up saying "Where technology, where Georgia leads." We've created a video, as I mentioned before, that's already had about 4,000 views on YouTube, which is pretty good for it not being viral unless we put something crazy on the front of it. It's got to go.
Maybe get a Kardashian.
Yeah. We got to do something to make it go viral. Mm-hmm. But one at a time, we're getting people to look at it, and so that's a good thing. And then lots of press and just working that angle. So we figure between promotion and influencing legislation, and then creating reports like State of the Industry reports that TAG does, that we can impact the economic development side. And we want to be, our goal by 2015 is to have Georgia be a top five technology state. Right now we rank about number 10, depending on what factors are that you look at.
Now you mentioned a portion of your time is now being spent going around to other areas to kind of share what's happening or how you're doing TAG here in Georgia. How do you see that as kind of funneling back business to Georgia, that activity?
Well, the one group we have CEOs like myself that are in all over the U.S. and Canada that are interested in moving technology. So one of the things that we're doing as a group is we're coming up with ways to combine our power to create some influence on federal legislation that, there's a lot of issues like on patent reform and things like that that are at the federal level that need to be addressed. H-1B visa, the legislators now, Senator Isaacson, one time I heard it say after we asked him the question, he said, yeah, these graduates that are foreign graduates that graduate from Georgia Tech, of the Georgia Techs of the world, they get a letter congratulating them on their graduation, then their next letter is that they have to go back home.
Asking them to leave.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Which makes absolutely no sense, but it's tied in all, as we've learned down at the federal level, it's all mixed in with the whole immigration issue, and it can't be separated. I think the Republicans and the Democrats would like to see something done with that, but obviously it's been a number of years, and it's still really hard. Our companies tell us that it's hard to keep people that are graduating from other countries that are graduating here and then going back home. So you have this dynamic going on where a lot of the engineers are retiring. We don't have H-1B visa, and there's a need, as I reported, State of the Industry for
right,
about 200,000 plus more kids by 2000.
We're a little short.
Yeah,
right?
We're a little short on people that are interested in going to school.
And then part of TAG, STEM. Aren't you guys involved in the STEM programs in the schools to kind of grow your own engineers?
Yeah, so we have a charity that we created called TAG Education Collaborative, and their goal is to get kids excited about math, science, technology, and engineering. And we're doing a couple things for the listeners out there. This summer we want to place 100 rising high school seniors who already have a propensity towards STEM into summer jobs in technology companies. So it's $1,000 for 5 weeks that goes to the student, because also Georgia and California are the two that have the highest teenage unemployment rate. So
really,
yeah, everybody that we offered a job to last year, we took 60 of them last year, and not one of them turned us down.
Really?
Yeah. So that's kind of a sad statement, but this year we're shooting for 100, and then we do a web challenge program, and then we're starting this program called Feed, Foster, and Accelerate. And the feed part is to get the sixth graders and then their parents and students, parents, and teachers, and really begin to make them aware that there's good jobs in technology that pay about twice as much as the average starting salary. About their average salary, is about $80,000 in the technology world. And I was just driving into work this morning, heard on the radio where they said that computer science is one of the top jobs that if you graduated this year from college that you can get a job.
Right. Well, so we're hearing in here that it's so bad out there, the shortage of engineers, is that some companies are paying kids to learn the engineering and then hiring them.
Yeah, yeah. I think, well, one of the challenges is that right now we do a skill proof report each month, and there's over 4,000 technology jobs open in Georgia. Even though unemployment is about 9%, there's still these in there. Systems engineers.
Right, and they're high-paying jobs. It's not like, they're entry-level, minimum wage jobs.
And the staffing folks call it a compression issue where companies are looking for people with more skills, so just don't come in with SAP or Oracle, come in with a few things. And then secondly, they come in with experience. So it's a little bit of a catch-22 even if they do get jobs. The other thing we learned last year as we did our tour around the country as part of our strategic planning with the state was that about 80% of the technology jobs are what would be termed more blue-collar technology. So you don't necessarily need a four-year degree or to go to Georgia or Georgia Tech. You can do a two-year or even out of high school possibility if you have the specific training in a technology area. And we were talking to folks like the guys that manage the Trident subs and the guys that manage the engines at maintenance of the engines at Delta that said it's 80-20, that most of the people they hire don't have, they have the technology skills, but they don't have the four-year degrees.
Right.
So what can local Georgia companies and individuals do to help? How can we help? How can we support this effort?
Well, one thing is if they're interested, hire somebody this summer. I think what we've been talking about is more of an apprentice program to get people in, as you guys already referenced, to get them into a job, give them some training. There's a couple of companies that have actually talked about, and I don't think they're fully implemented this yet, but is taking kids that are in high school, particularly in underprivileged areas, and supporting them with a part-time job after school. And then actually paying their way through college if they committed to going out after college and staying with them for a period of time.
Wow, that's great.
That's a page out of the Army book, right?
Yeah, it is. A lot like that. And on the legislative side, we're looking at a number of things. But one of the things I said at the summit was, and all the people that are into languages are going to be calling me after this, or calling you better yet. But it's like, okay, you have to take, I remember in school I had to take 2 years of French or Latin or whatever, so you have to do that. But you don't have to take any computer science or technology course to get your degree. So it's kind of old school where the schools aren't catching up with what actually has to be done. I mean, my father-in-law used to talk about all the importance of taking Latin and, the opportunity there in terms of better English. But if for the most part, can somebody say why in this day you have to take 4 years of a language or 2 years of a language, but you don't have to take a computer science course or something in the technology space? So we'd love to see Georgia be one of the first states to actually implement a requirement that you have to have at least one course before you graduate from high school.
They're not very nimble.
No,
education.
It's a little bit slow moving. you notice that.
Yeah. Got a few laughs from the gallery on that one. Even. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you back in the studio this morning. Before
My
we
pleasure.
Let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you if they want to learn more and maybe get actually involved in TAG.
Well, we have a number of websites. First of all, I go to tagonline.org, and that's a great website. It has a lot of information about our meetings, our activities. My email is tmantella@tagonline.org, so you can contact me or just call our office at 404-817-3333, and one of our staff would be happy to help you. So thanks for the opportunity to be on here again.
Yes, sir. Absolute pleasure. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our other guests?
I'd love to do that.
Terrific. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have a gentleman. He was our booth buddy at the Tag Summit. Remember, that one of the first things we do when we do a remote broadcast, because we often come, we show up with a big PA speaker.
That's right. You're giving out secrets here.
This is trade secrets. This is proprietary knowledge, right? We should have him sign an NDA first. But it's just like throwing a big party at the dorm or in the apartment complex. Right. You got to get the neighbors on board. Yeah. So we tried to be real nice to him, and we did not run him off, but he's our booth buddy. He's with an outfit called Bright Whistle. And he is a marketing analyst for these folks. Welcome to the show, Robert Anderson.
Thank you. It's good to be here. And yeah, I was it was nice to be able to look at you guys during the whole show for the slower parts. When everyone else would go into the meetings during Tag, I could listen to you guys keep myself entertained.
So let's get a take from you about this Tag Summit. What'd you think of it? What'd you get out of it? And if and how you'd recommend it for other people?
Well, Bright Whistle's right in the middle of it. It's great because we're with Tag, and we're also at ATDC, which is a business incubator located on Georgia Tech's campus. It's a great little program. They provide a nice little environment for technology startups to get off the ground. Tag was an awesome event, and it was really well done. We were honored to be one of the top 10 selectees, which is very, very cool. We appreciate that distinction. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening, as Tina was touching on. The Tag conference was good, and it was good to hear our guy Greg Foster up there talking about some more Bright Whistle and such.
So tell us a little bit about Bright Whistle. What is it you guys are out there doing for folks?
So Bright Whistle is what we say is we're social patient acquisition. So we are the solution to the ever-encroaching, ever-changing consumerism of healthcare. So before I get into what we do, I'll explain a little about the situation surrounding healthcare right now, just for those who aren't aware. Healthcare is entering a period of consumerism that is a trend that's followed with every other industry, but it's the last to adopt, as always, because healthcare, with obvious liabilities and such, is typically the latest adopter of these things. And so what Bright Whistle does is we help bring patients to physician practices and hospitals and the clinical networks through a couple of means online. And essentially what we're doing is we're helping the folks who are going on the computer and trying to, instead of just taking word from their doctor's referral or any of that such, they're doing what they do with any other product or service, which is they're going online and they're using all the available resources online to make good decisions about where they should go, what the best price point is, who the best operation is, all of that sort of thing. And Bright Whistle is helping the doctors and the hospitals on the other side of that equation be as prominent and prevalent as possible as they can online.
So now, in the past, your doctor would say, go see this specialist,
exactly.
And you would just go, okay, and you would just drive over there. But now you're saying that because now a lot of people have, high deductible health care, so they're paying out of pocket now, so they're doing a little more research? Is that what's happening?
Exactly. So for the past 50 years, you go see your doctor, his family doctor. You've had his family doctor for, 10 years. He also was your father's doctor, yada, yada, yada. And real good family friend, and he, you have a knee problem. So you go in and he goes, okay, you should go see my friend Joe, the orthopedist, because Joe is great at what he does.
And also he's my golf partner.
he's also, that's exactly right. He also plays golf with me on the weekends.
That's probably just a coincidence.
When he hits a bad shot, I say, great shot. When I hit a bad shot, he says, great shot. So that's how it's been, and that's a great thing for doctors, and you can't blame them for doing this. They've set up these referral networks, which is, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine. And for the past 40 years, far before the internet and all that, that was just how it went. You'd go, he would recommend you to his friend Joe the orthopedist, and you would 95% of the time go see Joe the orthopedist, because that was just how it was done. And that is not how it is anymore. These referral networks have gone from being sort of a law to more of a guideline, if that even. It's more like a recommendation than anything else. So because nowadays, you go in that same scenario, he says, go see Joe the orthopedist. You go back home, you type in Joe the orthopedist. He may be your starting point with looking up doctors that you want to see, but you're going to look at 15 other doctors that day, just like that. Boom, 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 because This is, again, where we are. It's the dawn of consumerism in healthcare.
Right.
So people are shopping, and the people who are shopping around for healthcare are getting better at it and smarter. And the available resources for them to do that are getting better and smarter. So that's how it's worked. Well,
so where do you guys fit in this?
So we are essentially the sword and shield for the doctor in this fight to maintain their referral networks as they sort of, you know, dissipate in front of them. So what BrightWhistle does is we essentially have four services that we provide, but our staple, our bread and butter is search and social targeting. So on Google and Facebook, we are able to create advertisements and paid results. So that's when, you know, when you're on Google, there's the organic results.
Right.
And then there's the results that show up before that. And we do the same with Facebook. It's kind of cool. We Facebook has just, in the past couple years, opened up their API. And API is their application program interface.
Right.
And that that allows people to kind of get their fingers on the machines at work at Facebook and build things out more to the way they like, as opposed to the very narrow confines of Facebook's way of creating ads. And I can pretty honestly say that most companies in America would love to have this sort of Facebook API access, because it allows you to do a bunch of really cool things. Well, BrightWhistle, part of our merging into the market, and a lot of buildup, such as our recognition and TAD stuff, we recently were granted not only access to Facebook API, but we're the only healthcare-focused API.
Wow.
And so that's pretty cool.
So what does that do for the consumer?
So for the consumer, that allows us to build ads within Facebook. Facebook's, we sort of joke, it's becoming an internet within an internet.
Right.
You'll see, it's crazy. Nowadays, you'll see on a company billboard, instead of a URL code, you'll see a Facebook address.
Right.
Like, that's the point of
reference.
Right,
instead of their website, it's their Facebook
page. It's facebook.com/something. And it's like, that's how big this is becoming right now. And believe it or not, there are people who are going online and either searching for places such as healthcare on Facebook, just because it's becoming this microcosm of the internet, or we're able to, with our Facebook API, more accessibly and more determinedly find what they would be looking for, and then very hyper-target these ads to those people.
So how would that work in our scenario of the person who needs to see an orthopedist? So like if on Facebook, he's like, oh, I got knee problems, all of a sudden those...
Sure. Well, there's a number of things at work. It's typically evolving around the information they provide us with their demographics and their interests. So if we have a 56-year-old on Facebook, lives in Atlanta, he's a cyclist. He's got on his Facebooks all sorts of things pinned up there, like, you know, Lance Armstrong fan, yada, 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 cycling, and a couple other things. We're able to look at his interests, his demographics, his position, and then we're able to very, very accurately target him for local orthopedists. And
wow. So, like, you can identify this guy's
smart.
This guy's a weekend warrior, so he's going to get hurt shortly.
He's going to get hurt. He's going to need
exactly.
An orthopedist.
Exactly.
That's
right. We're like fortune tellers. No, yeah, it's cool. So we're able to go in there and like there's certain things. Some of them are a little bit more buckshot, you know, and we can't quite. But then some of them, it's like a laser.
Right.
So we have a couple plastic surgery firms that we do work for. And the, you know, aesthetic surgery is kind of a little bit of a different bag, because it's highly elective. You know, people are volunteering to do this.
And insurance doesn't cover that, right?
Exactly. It's private.
So can you tell if they're like if they're ugly or something?
That's right. We go on and we look at their picture. Well, you need help. No.
It's very advanced.
It's extremely, extremely, yeah.
Now, do people get on there and talk about healthcare the way they do restaurants? Like, I had a sandwich at Joe's Deli and it was very mediocre. Do they do the same thing with healthcare stuff?
Do they go, my plastic surgeon's terrible?
Some people roll their eyes when I say, that's where it's going, but that is the truth, whether you want to or not. People feel like it trivializes this, you know, pedestal that healthcare is usually put on, as it should be. But no, that is actually where we're heading towards.
Wow.
So people are on Facebook, either on so there's Facebook and Google, where they can be on the place page for Google, which is those little red balloons that come up on the map.
Sure.
You click on those, you get reviews there, or they can be on the Facebook page. And yeah, the new word of mouth is for healthcare now, is especially it's virtual now. It's taking place in those reviews, and so people go in there and they have conversations back and forth. I was in a meeting where I was pitching to one of our new clients, and I was talking. It's a pediatrician. I was talking about how, you know, no, this conversation is really going on. And while I was pitching to them up on the thing, Facebook refreshed, and there was a new post with a woman asking, did they account for this with your child's problem? I'm really interested. Please let me know more. She was asking there on the Facebook wall to another consumer.
Just live while you're doing
it. In front of our eyes about that she wanted to speak to this other person, which you can do on Facebook. You can see who they are and you can message them. She wanted to know if the pediatrician was good. So it's really getting to that point. And, you know, healthcare is a very broad industry. So there's certain that are more than others. You know, plastic surgery, for example, being a very highly discussed thing. They want to know, you know, is this good? Is this good? Yada, yada, yada. But yeah, it's actually reaching that point. And so that's one of the things that Bright Whistle does is we actually have
And this Facebook API is what kind of got you into this top 10 innovative firm?
That was
a component of it?
That was a component for sure. But I like that was that's one of, I think, four cool things that we have going for. Yeah.
We don't want to tell you all four.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Spread it out.
Well, I want to get back to this sword and shield concept because all of this great, fancy, intriguing technology does create this genuine desire and need for a sword and shield. So speak to that a little bit more. How are you helping these doctors out?
So the referral networks that they've typically had are breaking down, as I said, and they're now at the point now where they're like, okay, well, I've counted for 45% of the patients I've had. I'm speaking to more physician practice right now. Hospital is a little bit of a different story, but we'll partition for the sake of conversation. So the physician practices have had, you know, 40% of their regular income, their regular patient influx is from their referral networks. Well, just because of the reasons I was saying before, that might be reduced down to 20 now or 15, 10, just almost gone. So they're seeing patients come in, but they're not quite sure where they're coming from, and they can try in-house, you know, little surveys and that kind of thing. But they're seeing that or just an overall drop in patient influx. So Bright Whistle helps compensate for that by ensuring essentially that they'll be everywhere they need to be online and as recognized as possible to compensate for this consumerism that's occurring. So we do search and social targeting, like I was saying. We do directory management, which is so another place where these conversations are happening online and people are researching are all the online directories. So Yelp, which is very famous, that's to your sandwich shop.
Right. Right.
That's, you know, people when I say Yelp, they go like, I'm not looking for a good burger. I'm looking for someone to reconstruct my knee. It's like, yeah, that's true. And I believe you, but you're going to have to start figuring that out somehow. And this is a pretty valuable resource. So all those online directories, Yelp, you know, Google Places, kudzu.com, vitals.com, places that people are going online to look up these physicians. Well, Bright Whistle, one of the four things I was saying we do is we go and we make sure that on all those directories, you're as prevalent as possible there, all your information is correct, that you're getting good reviews up there, and that within that directory, you're going to be as highly ranking as possible.
Right.
So it's in a way, I say it's sword and shield. It's in a way, it's like, look, there's a battle occurring here, and you're losing. You're going to have to switch up your weapons if you want to stay in the fight because it's sliding out from under your feet.
So would a good part-time job in this industry be the person that comes behind and says good things about them, like to counter the bad things? There's a little cottage industry that could spring up.
Sure. Well, we're not sending in little secret shoppers to go in and have a procedure and then write a good review. How we help with the reviews, one of the cool things we have going is we actually we give our clients tablets, like Kindle Fires.
Right.
They're just little tablets that we get them from Amazon, and we wipe them, and we wrap them in a little program. And what that allows it to happen is when the doctor finishes treating a patient, say he finishes and he's been getting kind of good vibes, you know, the patient hasn't been complaining too much.
They're
and
still under a little.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
A little nitrous oxide.
Got a little nitrous oxide going, sure. And as soon as you know, they finish up and they can tell that they did a great job, they can hand this patient the tablet and say, hey, if you don't mind, you know, a few minutes before you walk out the door, if you could just write a little something on on your Facebook or on your Google.
Or Yelp or whatever, right?
And that sounds very simple, and it is. But the truth of the matter is 1 out of 10 people goes online to write a good review. The majority of people who are going back, who are remembering 24 hours later about that doctor, are typically not very happy about what's happened. So that helps sort of put the reviews that they want to go up there. And we tell the doctors not to you know, filter and just select the good ones because, as everyone here knows, as being a consumer, if you go to a site and they're all negative reviews,
that's
or positive reviews, yeah, you get a little suspicious.
Right.
So I got to know, how do you you guys go to market? How do you sell what you're doing? And as part of that response, please share with us how you found TAG and how you're trying to leverage that relationship.
Definitely. So we have been going to market in a number of ways. Our CEO, Greg Foster, he's very connected in Atlanta. He's done a couple startups now. So he has some deep roots, which have helped us so far. But we have a sales team, and we're approaching. As we were saying, TAG is a great place to network. There's just a bunch of stuff happening with TAG. We've met several contacts that are people who are either just interested and want to connect you with someone else just altruistically because they like technology and they think that you can help each other up. That's just one of the benefits of being part of a technology community like that. We've been doing that, and then people are starting to come to us now. They're word's getting out, and so we're lining them up.
So what's next for you guys? Where are you going to put most of your energy and effort over, say, maybe the next 6-9 months?
So we have been, for the past year, our first year, been doing physician practices, things that we could pretty easily take in and under our wing. We've just started moving into hospitals, and we've got some really cool things going. We just recently in Atlanta picked up Piedmont, and things are going well with that. We've got a few other big ones in the pipeline. So we're trying to bring this to hospitals to help the hospitals out, which is, as I said, a little bit different game, bigger game. But it's going well, and we're establishing them, getting them set up there.
I think you guys have a fantastic, bright future ahead of you, and I'm so delighted that you came in to visit with us, man.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Hey, how about hanging with us while we visit with our last guest, will you?
That sounds great.
All right. So bringing it all home for us, Lee, is the gentleman from InnoVault, Mr. Jeff Spence. Welcome to the program, man.
Thank you very much.
Well, you've been very polite and relatively quiet, although you did laugh a couple of times. but now it's your turn to shine. Tell us a little bit about InnoVault.
Yeah, InnoVault is I'm really surprised that Tina didn't list it as being one of the top sectors for George. It's a very, very sexy industry about industrial power protection, and I think it's something we're going to see in Georgia.
He'll be working on the eighth cluster right now.
Absolutely. I guess he's scribbling over here on the side. He's writing his things down.
It'll be a society soon.
InnoVault is a technology company. It was actually born out of Georgia Tech, and so it was invented by a Georgia Tech professor, the technology was. And went to the ATDC and Venture Labs, and so the logical extension, obviously, was to be fully involved in TAG and be as close as we possibly can to that organization. You know, big thing about a lot of companies that spawn in Georgia is that they hop the first train to Silicon Valley or to RTP or
right.
to Austin or somewhere else where there's kind of a history of capital, and Atlanta just hasn't had that reputation.
But yeah.
The interesting thing about Atlanta, though, is that you have exceptional technology companies. You really do have them here. And so being from that venture capital, private equity background, a lot of guys, my personal contacts in the world, love to land in Atlanta and spend a few days here because now you find a company that's maybe taken in a tenth of the amount of capital as some that's a similar company out in Silicon Valley, and it's 10 times farther along in development because you live on what you have. And so the companies out here traditionally do more with less amount of capital. So there's two things about that. One is, hey, that's great. The second thing is, how do we fuel these companies who are doing well with exceptional amount of capital? And dropping that on Atlanta is a big help. But so InnoVault, it come up really with a chipset, for lack of a better explanation, that has solved equipment failure, electronic equipment failure. And I say that, and that's a little bit of a stretch, hasn't solved all of it. I mean, if you drop it, it's still going to break. Our chipset mm-hmm. doesn't help that. But really, from a power perspective, our understanding over the course of the last 50 years has been around this whole thing about surge protection and filtering and all these things. And the reality is that accounts for less than 0.5% of all the damaging effects to electronics. So when you're when your TV set died or your wireless router died, seldom do you see black smoke coming out of the top of it, or you smell ozone or fire department showing up, so I doubt it was lightning. And if everything else around it is still running, I could assure you it wasn't lightning that struck and killed your wireless modem. So there's other things that are going on, and the success rate we've had has been absolutely phenomenal. I mean, we took thousands of these units and pushed them through some big industrial and commercial customers up in Canada and the U.S. and everywhere else, And we're talking about 93% reduction in power-related failure, we're talking, you know, upwards of, in some cases, a lot higher, but on, you know, easy layups have been, you know, 30, 35% reduction in service costs on those things. So when people have to roll trucks and that kind of thing, it's just an enormous decrease in the amount of service, I'll say, workload that you have in maintaining electronics. And so it's a very specific thing. It just looks down the wire. I wish I actually knew what it did. These guys came out of Georgia Tech.
They don't bother you with that. The details of how it works.
Yeah,
right?
I got my electrical engineering degree in college, and they kind of same kind of thing that, you know, that Dino's talking before. They kind of, but one thing was, here's your degree. The other one was, never ever practice engineering. But the, you know, smart guys at Georgia Tech that, you know, they don't really explain in detail how this thing works, but basically just profiles creates signatures from the power that comes in. They compare those to ones that are known to cause damage. And so we always want to categorize it as something. It's a voltage surge, it's a sag, it's whatever. That's just human kind of naming convention. But the reality is, they're very specific signatures that we know kill electronics.
Right.
And this thing just goes through and remediates those things. Just looks for very specific things and takes them out, switches them out. It's all very heavily patented and filtered, and so we put ours in this very ugly big plastic box, and that's what our enclosure is. And I'm sure people at my company like me saying that, but
the marketing people,
yeah, they're very pleased. But the most amazing thing about it is, back to the comment I made earlier. It's a great comment, by the way. Is that these companies in Atlanta do is, you know, we made a box that was not pretty, because pretty costs money, but it's bulletproof and it works so well. And the fact is, it sits behind industrial copiers or ATM machines or whatnot. You don't care to see it anyway. But it's just a box, and in the box is our technology. So we're selling lots and lots of those things. And so we had a 10 times revenue increase over the course of the last 12 months.
If it's saving me on service calls and saving me on margin, then it's a gorgeous box.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, right? Beautiful box. And I'll tell you this, that's the punchline to it, is not one of our customers would come back and say, until you can do something with the aesthetics of this thing,
right.
We're out.
The box goes in front of any of the piece of technology you're trying to protect, or can it go in front of the whole building and protect it?
It can go in front of the whole building. The issue is, this is another kind of the brilliance of what was discovered at Georgia Tech, was that and also MIT came out with a huge report on the same thing, is that 80% of all the power disturbances don't come from the grid. Uh-huh. They actually come from within your building.
So
you put something on the outside of your building and you're only filtering out a small piece of that. So it's we get all these wonderful anecdotes of my server farm goes crazy, or my copier goes out, and typically it's always around lunchtime, right? Well, it's because it's just over the wall from their kitchen, right? Someone goes in there and turns the microwaves on and they do this kind of things, and it's killing all their electronics. And so that kind of thing happens. It's very pervasive inside of a building, especially very complex buildings like the one we're in, is that you have just its own little microgrid. So putting it on the outside helps. It just doesn't do the whole deal.
Right.
The whole deal.
So you need it in front of each piece of technology.
Correct.
So that's good for you guys.
It's great for us. Lots of things. Matter of fact, if you can actually daisy chain hundreds of them in front of every device, would be fantastic.
Right, two or three.
Is there a residential market for this at some point?
There is. The ugly box we make right now, no. Again, people are going to buy on the view of it, but that's transitioning very quickly. And so the team we have is great. They're doing a great job about changing the look and feel and the form factors. So we are doing that into smaller and smaller, more attractive, more, I'll say, consumable form factors. The biggest win, frankly, is taking our technology up out of our box. I mean, really, who's Enovolt, from a consumer, consumer electronics standpoint, and licensing that into other manufacturers' box. And so it goes, anybody who makes any kind of electronics.
Right, who is already making the electronics, add it to it.
Absolutely. And so it becomes a component, and we're having some great success along those lines. And so we're talking about volumes over this year, whether it's in our box or the form factors, that will be in the eight figures. And we're talking about lots and lots of these units that are going out. And, whether it's in a component form, and we're dealing with some very large, Taiwanese, manufacturers and whatnot, they're spitting out these boxes and all the little components, and also with major service organizations domestically, internationally. So people are, what's interesting about it is, if we try to explain, like that awful explanation I gave of the technology earlier, if we try to do that, people's eyes just gloss over. But if I just say, hey, tell you what, take this thing, put it out there behind the 20% of your boxes that are causing 80% of your problems, right, then instantly they just start buying. And not one of them comes back and demands this explanation of how this thing works.
Well, I was trying to envision a moment ago the guy that says no to this, because this has got to have a huge impact on the bottom line.
No, it does. It does. It's immediate. I mean, it's and we're talking about something where if you're rolling trucks or you got guys out there servicing electronics, which is a huge, huge business, this is an absolute no-brainer. And so it's us trying to catch up with our production.
Can you
right
make
now.
The box
thing.
Make things go haywire at day 91?
Exactly.
Now that's a problem.
That's where we're trying.
But
we're
the
trying
day after
to,
the
exactly.
warranty expires, right?
Yeah, we're trying to follow people who actually make things make things crash, and then we'll go back behind it.
Now, exactly when right. you're, I would imagine the challenge is that, like, who are you replacing? Like, this is something you got to kind of educate them that they have this problem. They don't think it's a problem because it's happening on a regular basis, right?
Correct.
It's just so
correct.
Inherent in the system. They don't think it's a problem. They just think it's the system.
Correct. And I think there's the whole adage, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. One is that this is an absolutely unique technology, which means that no one knows it exists.
Right. Right.
As a matter of fact, no one even knows the problem exists. You know, they know their stuff's dying, but they don't think of it being anything other than
right. Stuff dies. That's just
diet.
What happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's just a natural thing. And so we're out there trying to convince somebody of a problem they don't know that even exists
right.
yet.
So how do you do that? That's got to be extremely challenging.
Well, I'll say that it's a challenge, but right now, I'll be honest with you, it's actually not a bad challenge. It's because we're catching up with ourselves. I mean, we've got, our production is great. Things are going the right way. We're honing our technology and our pitch on the customers that we do have.
Walk us through how you got that first customer. Where they didn't know. So you just picked an industry, I guess, that had lots of problems and you knew you could solve their problem and you just give them free boxes to show them
We didn't even give them free boxes. It was far more intelligent than that. What we did was we actually built our ugly box to look exactly like our competitor's ugly surge protector. That's what it was. And it was, look, make this thing look like theirs and charge the same amount of money for it. And then when they start realizing the service cost reduction and the equipment failure reduction and all these things,
right,
they'll buy more. Voila. Or that was the birth of the business. And so it's gone very well. But to your point, in order to scale this thing, we have to do a better job of learning how to communicate.
Because you don't
want to
say we're
on.
A better surge protector,
no.
right? That's the last thing you want
no.
to do.
Matter of fact, that's the first thing everybody says, and that's the last thing that we right. want to hear. Exactly, because it is a completely different technology.
Right,
it's
but that's what. But that in their head, that's the box they put it in. Is it's
exactly,
a surge protector?
It's a surge protector. Yeah.
Right?
So it's what's interesting though is that we try to message so much from a consumer standpoint, from a commercial standpoint. How do we go out and message it to people who wouldn't really have a language for it. But the guys that we impact the most, these large, global 500 service organizations, man, they can articulate this thing pretty quickly, right?
Right.
I'd say it's going to save service costs because of X. And they go, "We'll try it." They try it, they like it, and they go, "I'm buying." Right? So it's actually doesn't require all of the branding fluff and all the rest of the
right.
stuff to it, cuz it's doing that. Now, I'll say at the same time, that limits our scale. That limits our ability to go quickly horizontally because we haven't cracked the code.
Well, at some point, you want me to go into the store and say, "Well, does that TV have an Intervolt gizmo in
Absolutely.
It before I'm willing to buy it?"
That's,
right?
And
right.
that's where it's going. And to that point, right now we've got a partnership right now with a major component manufacturer that does 350 million units a year, believe it or not, and of components that are embedding our technology into their components. And the terms of that agreement are that we are, it's like Intel inside.
Right, it's
Intervolt
inside.
It's Intervolt inside. And so everything that's
nice.
How it's sold, how it's leveraged, how it's branded, everything else is all based on that brand. So a lot of we're kind of following demand to a certain extent, and we're kind of historically now framing our language around how our consumers
sure.
are buying from us versus the other way around. But it's working and it's doing really well.
You know what, Lee? I think one day I'm going to be able to turn my phone on while we're on air.
You think?
This gives me hope.
You can dream.
Because I always have to turn my phone completely off when we go on air, and it bugs me because I want to tweet.
Because we don't have Intervolt inside.
Exactly.
We don't have Intervolt inside yet. In just a moment, I'm going to ask you to make sure that we share your contact information with
sure.
our guests. But I'm also, to wrap the show, I'm going to go around the table, and I'm going to start with you and get some free consulting. But before we do that, how can our listeners get in touch with you or learn more?
Absolutely. They can go to our website at www.intervolt.com, and that's the best spot for it. To go there, just take a look at it. And then when you still don't know what's going on, then give us a call for contact information on there. But, yeah, that's the best spot for it.
All right. Terrific. Well, I would very much like to go around the horn. We're going to start with you, Jeff, if we could. And if you would, just share with our listeners, all of you guys seem to have really done a fantastic job of getting your organizations off the ground. And in Tino's case, of course, involved with a lot of organizations doing that. What piece of advice, if any, would you have to offer someone who's trying to get their organization off the ground in this space? Maybe a lesson that you've learned or something that worked out really well for you.
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson that I've learned, and this is historically, and this is so I was able to not apply that horrible experience back to Innovolt, is just surround yourself with exceptional talent. You know, so what, you know, for us, a lot of people will focus on what can I get away with from an HR standpoint? Don't even try it, right? You know, whatever you saved on that end, I guarantee you'll lose, you know, in multiples.
Well, that
on
was
the
Lee's
other
strategy.
End. That was Lee's strategy, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, staffing this the show. So that to me is the major thing. Surround yourself with talent, and the talent's not just. I'm very fortunate. My team is they're rock stars. I mean, I really, really got a great team. But it's also talent like Tag and other people who kind of surround you, the teams around you, because if you don't, if you're on an island somewhere thinking you're going to solve the world's ills by yourself, you lose. You lose quickly.
Fantastic. And Robert Anderson, again, with Bright Whistle, what counsel would you have to offer in this regard?
Yeah, I mean, so much of our strength have come from being part of the technology communities that we were part of. I'd have to say that's, if I had to pick one thing, that was one of our best starts. We just being part of TAG, ATDC, those type of things. You meet so many people, and it's worth kind of, when you're in those kind of communities, it's worth hearing everyone out, even if they have something that doesn't seem related at all, because you'd be amazed how you can connect those things sometimes and form partnerships and just, you know, friendly agreements.
Terrific. And Tino, we saved you for last because you have a window into a whole lot of organizations that have done this really well, yeah?
We do see the good, bad, and the ugly, I guess I'd say. So a couple things. We're doing a business launch competition right now, and we had about 85 companies vying for that honor. It's now down to the final four. But one of the things that I've seen is that, you know, people that have ideas haven't really sharpened that. They haven't spent enough time on developing the business plan. Doesn't have to be a full business plan, but making sure they have all their T's crossed and I's dotted. The second thing for companies that maybe are a little bit more mature is they skimp on research a lot. So they think they're the only game in town related to. It's good to hear Bright Whistle and Innovolt because I think they are the only game in town. They're doing a great job. We're proud to have them as part of TAG and the technology community. But a lot of times people skimp on research, so they don't know who their competitors are, what their price points are, and they tend to find out at the worst time when they're trying to sell something that, oh, yeah, I already have that product or service. So I think really spending the time on the research is a key piece.
Fantastic. Well, Lee, did you learn anything this morning, buddy?
Great show, as always.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Tino Mantella, Robert Anderson, and Jeff Spence, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.